Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled The Genius of Kempo Carter Rinpoche by Lama Kathy Wesley. During the 43 years Kempo Carter Rinpoche taught in the United States, he represented the pure Dharma, sometimes with words, sometimes with actions. He surprised people with a knowledge of their innermost thoughts and always enchanted them with his loving heart. Lama Kathy recalls stories of Kempo Rinpoche's teachings that left an indelible impression. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, good morning. This is Lama Kathy Wesley on behalf of the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center of Columbus, Ohio, welcoming you to the Sunday morning Dharma Talk. This morning, I decided to choose a topic that I have had on my list. Believe it or not, we do keep like lists of these topics. I've had this topic on my list for months, and I never did put it together. So I think this is a really wonderful opportunity for us to do it. And I am looking forward to talking with you regarding the topic of the genius of Kempo Carter Rinpoche's teachings. Those of you who know me know that I have been a student of Kempo Carter Rinpoche since 1977. And as it happens, yesterday was the 44th anniversary of me taking refuge with Kempo Carter Rinpoche. So even though I set up this talk as a way of actually getting me to write the talk, then it just so happens that it falls on the day following my refuge anniversary. In fact, you'll see there's some extra offerings on the shrine behind me, and also extra offerings on the White Tara Shrine too, and that these are in honor of the 44th anniversary. In fact, I had forgotten my anniversary, but yesterday, Dharma friend Jim Arter, shout out to you, Jim. He let me know that he actually had it written on my calendar. So he had it written on his calendar, and then he let me know. So it's like it was great. It was just fantastic to be reminded by somebody outside myself. Oh gosh. So before we start today's talk, let's do a short meditation and then taking of refuge. Actually, taking of refuge comes first. So we'll start with a recitation of the refuge prayer in English. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. Through the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. Okay, now we'll do a couple of moments of meditation. I've got my little meditation gong, and we'll sit for about a minute, collecting our thoughts. Okay, so I'm going to start with a short prayer of my own. Oh, Palden Sawai Lama Rinpoche, Dagi Chiwar Pede Denshula, Kadran Chimbogune Chesunde, Kus and Tugin Udrup Saldu So. Roughly translated and with emphasis on the rough, roughly translated, the meaning of this is I asked for the blessing of my guru, great, compassionate, and kind, who sits above my head on a lotus flower. I pray for the blessing of your body, speech, and mind. So today we're talking about Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, seen here on the cover of his book, the Amrita of Excellent Eloquence, which was written by his nephew, Lama Karma Drodol, and it's a biography of his life. In this book, Kempo Rinpoche talks about, Lama Karma's book, but he talks about the life of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, who was born in Tibet in 1924 and who escaped in 1959, along with many other Tibetan Buddhists and lamas who had to escape from persecution by the communist government. And so as a result, he undertook a rather brave journey across the mountains in 1959, carrying with him, sometimes in his arms, the young four-year-old Tolku of Trangu Monastery, his home monastery in Tibet, who became known later as Trelek Rinpoche. So after having made this harrowing escape and coming to safety in India, he then caught tuberculosis. And catching tuberculosis, he was hospitalized for some time in grave condition. And he made an aspiration that if he was able to get well, he would continue to serve the Dharma and beings, especially to serve His Holiness, the 16th Karmapa, who was the head of the Karmakaju lineage and who had escaped some months before them and was now living in Sikkim, the small kingdom of Sikkim in North India. So after that, many people will know the story of Rinpoche's life, which is told on the website www.kagyu.org. And you can read Rinpoche's life story there. And what happened after that was that the 16th Karmapa let Rinpoche know that he needed Rinpoche to be healthy so that Rinpoche could go to America to teach. And so eventually Rinpoche was able to get, yes, a compassion visa to get into the United States for tuberculosis treatment. He came to the United States in 1976 and took treatment for his tuberculosis, was cured, and then after that began teaching. He was requested to come to Central Ohio by a young couple named Wesley and Patricia Williams. And they invited Rinpoche to come, and Rinpoche and a translator came in September of 1977 for the first time. I met Rinpoche on that visit and interviewed him for the newspaper and in my little town of Newark, Ohio. And meeting him was a pivotal moment in my life. I was able to, in him, see all of the qualities of wisdom and compassion that are talked about in Buddhist teachings. And I was able to see in him the potential for enlightenment for all of us. I think that's really the point, isn't it? That when we read about Buddhism in books, we say, wow, that's neat. I'd love to do that. But I'm not sure, can I? Is that something I can do? And then when we see a teacher such as Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, we see them in the flesh, so to speak, we come to realize that we have the same potential and that we also could come to the fruition just as they have. And I guess that is, for us, the value of teachers. Yes, teachers give us instruction. Yes, teachers show us the proper way to practice. Yes, teachers let us know what we could and should be doing in our practice. But more than that, they serve as an example for us. And they show us what it looks like to be an awakened being. And that gives us an inspiration that's, I guess you could say, very rare. And this is why they're so important. So in any case, this little bit of information about Rinpoche's early life and so forth. And I do introduce you to and recommend to you the book Amrita of Eloquence. And so in any case, that's something to think about. The book Amrita of Eloquence talks about Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's work in teaching and how he helped spread the Dharma and benefit beings. But what I want to talk about today is what I call the genius of his teaching. He was extraordinary in his capacity to meet people where they are. He didn't say, I am a great teacher and I want you all to come up to my level so that I can teach you. He actually came down to people's level and spoke to them directly where they were and met them where they were in their confusion, in their delusion, in their suffering, and met them right there and spoke to them right there and addressed them right there. And so I would say that the first example of genius of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's teaching is that he would teach exactly what was needed to exactly the person who needed it and exactly the right way. In other words, he met people where they were and gave them the Dharma that would help them the most in that moment. The second bit of genius of Kempo Rinpoche's teachings is that he understood Western people and was able to translate the Dharma from the Tibetan milieu that he had been born into this new and unusual world that he became part of. Those of you who have read parts of his biography know that when he was a child, he actually dreamt about America. He dreamt of a place where men and women dressed the same. They all wore trousers. And he dreamt of the big buildings and the wide streets. And so it was, I guess you could say, a foregone conclusion that he knew he was coming to America. But his arrival here, I think, allowed Tibetan Buddhism to grow and flourish, and particularly the Karmakagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, the Mahamudra practice tradition, to flourish here because he was able to culturally translate. He gave examples that were American examples, and he gave advice about the common things that we run into every day. He frequently spoke about America, saying, well, you know, America is a pretty great place, and it's so clean, and there's a lot of wealth here. But then he would say, but you really need more Dharma. So even though he was talking about America and complimenting it, on the other hand, he was saying, well, but you need a little bit more than what you have. You need something you don't have, which is the Dharma. You need the teachings of wisdom about the nature of mind, the nature of suffering, the nature of happiness, and how you become happy, and how you avoid suffering, and so on. You need these teachings, and these teachings are what is important for you now. And so he both complimented us and then gave us what we needed, which was the teachings of wisdom and compassion. So this was, again, his gift. His gift was to speak to us in a culturally sensitive way. Not only did he meet people where they were, but he gave teachings in a culturally sensitive way. And I think that this is very important for us because as Americans, we do tend to think that we're pretty great. And it is really important for us to see that there's more than one way to be great. And one of those ways is love, compassion, wisdom, and kindness. And Rinpoche really exemplified all of those. And in fact, I think that part of the reason that he was a great cultural translator was because he lived it. He actually lived it. Everything he did was imbued with purpose. Even the way he drank a cup of tea, where he would hold it in his hand and gently touch it and gently bring it to his lips and drink. And just with this continuous mindfulness that showed us what meditation could do for a person, that it could actually change the way you manifest in the world and change the way you experience the world. And so these are the kinds of things he did. Another way he led us was to show us the importance of equanimity and fairness. In Tibet, the life was not always equal. And men and women weren't equal, high society, low society, not always equal. But in America, he decided to take that a little bit further. And so, for example, he would often make decisions about what to do with two individual people. He had a gift, and who was he going to give that gift to? He would actually do it by lottery, by drawing. He would actually do this in order that it be fair, in order that it be, have equanimity folded into it. And in fact, I remember when we were getting ready to go into 3-year retreat, we were given a number of really amazing scroll paintings, Tonka paintings, like the one behind me. And it was customary for the men's building to get the nicer items and the women's building to get the less nice items. But Kemper Rinpoche, in his wish to be fair, he actually had us draw lots for these. And so as a result, the women got the best tonkas, the men got the best musical instruments, and so on and so forth. And so in a way, he was starting a new tradition. And this new tradition really touched us. It really, really touched us that he was able to show us this fairness and to demonstrate to us how one could treat groups of people in a way that was fair. And so that's informed a lot of my thinking going forward. And so that's a second bit of his genius, was the fact that he was able to culturally translate from Tibet to American milieu. And then the third bit of genius of Kemper Rinpoche's teaching is that he gave everyone something special. Each person who met him, he gave a nugget of truth, a nugget of compassion, or maybe it was an example. A woman came to me once and said, "Oh, I've just been to see Kemper Rinpoche, and he like changed my life." And I said, "Well, tell me about it." And she said, "Well, something tragic had happened in my family, and I couldn't let it go. And I went to Rinpoche not knowing what to do or say, thinking that I was just going to go and get a blessing. And I walk into his presence and I burst into tears because I realized that he was completely loving, completely compassionate, completely non-judging me. He knew my circumstance. He knew of my tragedy. But there he was, and he opened his arms to me and he hugged me." And she said, "In that moment, I realized that I was holding on to my grief over what had happened in my family, and that now I could let it go." And this was his genius. He knew precisely what people needed, and he knew precisely how to administer what they needed. And he gave everybody a nugget. I cannot tell you how many times I have spoken to people, because Kemper Rinpoche passed away in October of 2019. So it's been about 2 years since he passed away. In that 2 years, I have run into so many people who told me about a teaching he gave to them, a teaching that was for them alone, and that it informed their life and it changed their life. and that they were then giving that teaching to me. And I realized that this was a way that Rinpoche was getting ready to help us help each other cope after his passing. He gave a little teaching to this person and a little teaching to that person and a little teaching to this person and that person. And that all of us would actually need to get together. All of us would actually have to come together in some way, shape, or form and share all of these amazing teachings. And that this would be, you could call it his final teaching to us would be to share what we learned from him, to share what he gave us, to share it with other people so that we could be his presence in these other people's lives. And I think that's what he's counting on us for. He's counting on us to represent him in everybody's life. I remember the first time he said to me, and this would have been somewhere in the 1980s, because we were in the old shrine room at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra Monastery, which was at that time in an old resort hotel at the top of Meads Mountain Road in Woodstock, New York. The monastery, the big stone monastery, was eventually built on that site. But during the early days of KTD Monastery, the monastery was housed in an old resort hotel. And the dining room, with all the knotty pine, you know, all the knotty pine paneling and so forth, that was the shrine room. I remember sitting in that shrine room and Rinpoche saying, "Now you have to go here and do this." He said, "You're my representative." And it just hit me for the first time that, like, he was trusting me to do something important in his name. And oh my gosh, this is so scary. And, but I went ahead and took care of what he had asked me to do. And that was, I guess, the start of my work that became the work that I'm doing today for Rinpoche. So, that was a nugget. And I continued to get nuggets of teaching from him, which is there's so many stories that I could share, but he would tell me things like when I first got out of 3-year retreat, I said, "Well, what do you want me to teach?" And he said, "Well, I want you to teach the sadhana practices, the mantras of Chenrezig and Tara and Medicine Buddha, and I want you to teach the Mahamudra preliminaries and so on." And I said, "I didn't hear you tell me that I could teach mind training or Lojong." And he said, "Oh, yes, yes, of course you can teach that." And then he added something else. He said, "And make sure you tell everyone that you teach that they can attain full Buddhahood itself simply by practicing love and compassion." And I just accepted what he had to say in the moment. But then later it made me scratch my head. How can a person possibly attain Buddhahood by love and compassion alone? Because aren't we supposed to meditate deeply on the nature of mind? Aren't we supposed to experience the nature of mind in this way? And it became a little bit like one of those Zen riddles for me. But that little nugget of teaching really helped inform my study of the book that you now know to be my favorite book, The Great Path of Awakening by Jamgon Kantrol. In this book, Jamgon Kantrol teaches about bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening and citta means mind. How to have a mind that wants to wake up and that can wake up. And so I thought about it very deeply. And if we look at the problem that we have as human beings, we cling to things. We either cling to things as being good and we want them, or we cling to things as being bad and we want to get away from them. Or perhaps we're just apathetic and indifferent toward things and we're bewildered by them. These three mental poisons, the attachment, aversion, and ignorance, are what sort of drive the engine of our suffering in this world. And that we need to find a solution. Of all of the things we suffer from, the thing we suffer from the most is ego fixation. We think we're the best, or perhaps we think we're the best at being the worst. But this misconception of who we think we are, this ego fixation, is what really drives all of our confusion, delusion, and suffering. So if ego fixation is the problem, what's the solution? In The Great Path of Awakening, Jamgon Kantrol suggests that the solution is love and compassion. He says that if we can learn to love ourselves and learn to love others and to place others before ourselves, that we will then accomplish selflessness. And this selflessness then will be our path to Buddhahood. So the little light bulb went off for me, ding, in that moment that Rinpoche's little nugget of teaching was incredibly true and needed to be passed on to others. So that's what I've been doing for the last 25 years that I've been a teacher, is trying to remember everything he taught me and trying to speak as many of those to as many people as possible. Because I don't know that I'm ever going to be able to write a book, but if people remember the teachings that he gave me, that I gave them, then he will in some ways still be present for us in this world. And to me, that is the third way that Rinpoche was a genius, and that he knew that people speak to people, that he knew that the human connection was what was important for making sure that the Dharma lives on. He would tell people things, and they would tell other people, and they would tell other people, and then this, what's good, gets passed on. And so just to have been part of this is a really special thing to me. So as they say in public speaking, in conclusion, Kempo Rinpoche was a genius because he was born in Tibet, came to America, rolled with whatever we threw at him, and was able to meet people where they were, culturally translate Buddhism from Tibetan milieu to the American milieu. And he knew the value of human connection, such that he gave little nuggets of teaching to all kinds of people so that they would spread them and pass them on. In fact, Rinpoche once said, this was in 1997 when we had an all KTC conference, all the KTCs got together. He said, it is important for the senior students of a Dharma center to create the atmosphere. That was the word the translator used, create the atmosphere for people to connect to the Dharma. And so he put the responsibility for introducing new people to the Dharma on the Dharma students. And of course, a person might say, well, I am not a senior Dharma student. And then he corrected that by saying, oh, and by the way, if you know one more piece of Dharma than the person standing next to you, you are the senior student in that pair. So you, he said, actually have a duty to answer people's questions that you can't answer. He said, you shouldn't answer questions that you don't know the answer to. He said, the most important thing to say is, I don't know. So he said, but if someone asks you a question and you know the answer, then it really is your responsibility to answer that person and to help them. And so in this way, he turned all of us into little teachers of in our own way. I spoke to a person this week who said that they try to represent Kempo Karthar Rinpoche to other people just by being nice, just by being kind, just by being not a problem for someone. And I think that's such a precious thing, because we have this potential to connect to other people just by representing to them who Rinpoche was to us. And I think it's kind of a brilliant thing. And it's a blessing. And it's something that will be with us forever. Now, I could go on and on and on and talk more about Rinpoche. And I would like to invite you, I'm going to take a moment here and get a link together for you. There is a website that's a tribute site to Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, and it's called Remembering Rinpoche. And I'm going to, let's see if I can put this in, but put it in chat. Yes, we were able to get the better of technology. RememberingRinpoche.org is the website where we are collecting stories about Kempo Kartha Rinpoche. And part of the, one of my secret wishes behind doing this particular talk is so that people would hear about Remembering Rinpoche and would then be able to share the Remembering Rinpoche experience with other people. And I'm going to see right now if we are lucky, or are we lucky, or are we not? Let's see if we are lucky, and perhaps I can show you what the what it looks like. Nah, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to share a screen, so I won't be able to do that today. But nah, I'm not going to be able to do that. Oh, what a shame. Okay. So, but it's a beautiful website. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it gives you like a little place where you can actually write your own story. So if you have a little nugget of information, a little nugget of Dharma teaching that Kempo Rinpoche gave you during your time with him, please consider either making a small video on your cell phone or wherever, and then sending it to us at Remembering Rinpoche. There's a web address, and that's the web address, but there's also a place that you can write to send us. I think it's info or stories at rememberingrinpoche.org. And we're collecting photographs as well. So if you have any stories about Rinpoche you'd like to share, you definitely can do it there. And the other thing I wanted to tell you is that right now we're working on building a stupa in memory of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche in Crestone, Colorado, and you can go to the website for the Karma Teksum Tashi Gomang stupa, and you can go there and make a contribution. So that's a little bit about, my goodness, you know, a little bit about Rinpoche's teaching, a little bit about how we can help keep his memory alive, and a little bit about how we can keep his presence in the world just by doing our practice. Rinpoche once said, If you want to please your teacher, you know how you please your teacher? You please your teacher by actually doing your practice, because that is getting you closer and closer and closer to the attainment of Buddhahood, which is actually what your teacher wants for you. So if you want to please your teacher, of course you can give gifts and things like that, but you really, the best gift you can give is your is of your own practice. Now, I know that that these Dharma talks are supposed to last for an hour, and I haven't done a good job of going for an entire hour, but there we go. Oh, thank you. Thanks very much. I'm going to see if I can put this. There we go. kttg.org, okay, /kkr-stupa. -project. Okay, thanks. Thanks for sharing that, Roger. Appreciate that. I'm going to leave that up there for a minute. Now, you might ask, what's a stupa? S-T-U-P-A means mound. The stupa is a mound, and it goes back to the life of the Buddha, because at the end of the Buddha's life, he asked that his remains after his cremation be parceled out and placed in these mounds or stupas in the places associated with his life. And that's how the eight forms of stupa came to exist. And the among these eight stupas are the stupa that commemorates the Buddha's enlightenment. I won't be able to remember all eight, but the bringing together of the Sangha when they had been split, the Buddha's descent from the God realm, the Buddha's conception and birth, and so on. And so there are different stupa shapes that commemorate these aspects in the life of the Buddha. So with the time I have remaining, I'd like to talk a little bit about stupas and about the program that's going to take place at Columbus KTC this coming week. Now, those of you who are subscribers to our newsletter will have received yesterday a newsletter now letting you know that we got a surprise and that Lama Tashi Dunda from the Toronto Karma Tikchen Zabsal Ling Center, KTZL Center in Toronto, is going to come to oversee the creation of the stupa that's supposed to go out front of Columbus KTC. And this coming weekend, the stupa will have been put together, and there'll be 2.5 days of pujas to in order to consecrate the stupa. And you can sign up by getting on our mailing list and writing a note to us at info@columbusktc.org, and then we'll reply with the information. So we're very excited about having a stupa, and we're very excited to have it be present with us. But you might say, well, what is a stupa and how does it work? It's a geometric shape, the bottom of which is a throne. The next section is a vase, and the top is a spire. And it suggests the form of a sitting Buddha. And this sitting Buddha then contains this geometric set of shapes, contains relics of the Buddha. It contains Dharma books, the Tibetan books. And sometimes it will also contain lots of little stupas as a way of magnifying the blessings. So what's going to happen is that I have a very large box here in my shrine room of materials that Lama Tashi sent that will go into the stupa. And it will provide blessings for everyone who sees it. So the stupa being in a public place in Columbus, Ohio, is a very special thing, and we're very excited about it, because what it will do is it will bring the presence of the Buddha into our everyday world. Because right now, if a person wants to interact with sacred objects, such as statues of the Buddha and so on, one has to go into the door of a Dharma center and sit in front of the images and interact with the sacred images of the Buddha. Because it's said that when one interacts with sacred imagery, that one retains, it actually awakens the Buddha nature that's within us. It's like two tuning forks tuned to the same note. When you strike one and then place it next to the other begins to vibrate sympathetically. And so when we see images of the Buddha, whether it's paintings or statues and so forth, there's a little bit of an awakening of the Buddha nature that's within us. And a blessing comes through that. Well, the same is said for the stupas. The spire is the top of the Buddha's head. The vase is his body. And then the throne underneath it is his seat. And so by placing this object in the middle of Franklinton, we hope to inspire and touch every person who drives by. So it's our hope that this particular event will help others. I've just realized that I've said something incorrect, and that is these ceremonies and so forth will not be open to the public. They will only be for people who register. So if you're seeing this message, I think it would probably be best for you to send us prayers rather than trying to come down to our site to to observe, because there's very little space and it'll all be closed off. So I have to apologize a bit in advance for having mentioned it. But I'm so excited about it, and I'm so excited for you to see it. We will probably try to webcast bits of the event so that you can see them. In terms of today, our talk today, I think that what I'd like to do now is answer any of the questions that you might have. Let's see. I'm going to take a look at the chat and see if there are any questions displayed in chat. I see some comments from our friends in. On Facebook, I don't see any comments from our friends on YouTube, so I hope you're there. And if you have any questions or comments, you can type them into chat. I see. Thank you, Nomi. She said that Kemp Rinpoche was a grandfather to her. That's very sweet. Yeah, because I think he was. I think he was that person to everyone. He was a parent, an uncle. He was a wise person who gave us information. Yeah. So I'm not seeing any questions appearing in chat. So this means that our Dharma talk for today was just a shorter than usual Dharma talk. I will tell one more story about Rinpoche. He was always able to know when we were in three-year retreat. He was always able to know when we needed cheering up. And so when he was when he would be spend some time with us, he would come and visit us every other day, the women's building one day, the men's building the other day. Remember, he was always about fairness. And he would often sit in the afternoon protector ritual with us, known as the Mahakala ritual, for protection and of the site and the place and the people and the Dharma and our practice. And when he knew we were feeling a little tired or down, he would do funny things, make funny faces, put on a funny voice to chant with. A very deep voice, and it would all always make us laugh. And I've told this story elsewhere, but there was a time when Sitra Rinpoche was visiting us, and Rinpoche had a great sense of humor. That Sitra Rinpoche was visiting us with his older tutor, or Gegen. And Kempo Rinpoche was sitting on one side of the shrine room, and Gegen was sitting directly across from him. And apparently Rinpoche wanted to play a prank on the Gegen, because in the Gegen's desk, he put, I've got them over here, but I can't put them on, a pair of Groucho glasses. And those of you who know what they look like, they're meant to look like Groucho Marx: big, heavy glasses, big, heavy eyebrows, a large nose, and a mustache. Well, Kemp Rinpoche had taken my set of Groucho glasses. He'd taken custody of them, and they were in his desk. But what happened in this particular case was that he put them in Gegen's desk. And so during Mahakala Puja, the puja is going, you know, bum, 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 bum. You know how the drum goes, you know, and everybody's chanting and the drum is going and so forth and so on. And Kempo Rinpoche, I'm sitting next to Kempo Kartha Rinpoche at this moment. I'm sitting next to him. And I see him get Gegen's attention. And he is indicating that he should look in his desk. And Gegen looks in the desk, and Kemp Rinpoche does this, which apparently is the symbol to put on your glasses. And Gegen was not having it. He was not going to do it. And then finally, after this went back and forth, By the way, the puja is going on and nobody sees that this is happening. I think it's just for me. Whatever this is happening is just for me. I'm just seeing, nobody else sees it. I see it. And so suddenly, Kempo Rinpoche does this. He pounds his chest just once. And as if to say, I double dare you. And Gagin then, of course, having been double dared, takes the pair of glasses out, puts them on. And then Kempo Rinpoche, sitting over here, gets the attention of Situ Rinpoche, who is sitting in the seat of honor in the front of the shrine. And then when Situ Rinpoche looks at him, Kempo Rinpoche just puts his hand out as though to indicate, here, enjoy this. Look at your teacher. Look at your tutor. And he looks at his tutor and he sees the funny glasses and he falls apart with laughter. And he laughs so hard that he has to take his shawl and put it over his face. To me, Kempo Rinpoche was this person. Who always could see the good in all of us and wanted to bring out the best in all of us, and who knew that being human was difficult and that sometimes the best teaching was a little bit of humor. So I am happy to have shared that story with you about Rinpoche. And I hope that it brings a smile to your face, because I know he would like that. And I want to thank all of you who came to the talk today, and I was happy to share my 44th anniversary of Refuge with you, and make the aspiration that we may have many more. And so let's get together and bring together all of the merit we've accumulated today by listening to Kempo Rinpoche's teaching, and make the aspiration that by listening to this teaching, that all beings will be liberated from suffering, that all beings will see their Buddha nature and then emanate in many directions and help sentient beings. I'll conclude by reciting a short prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thanks, everyone. And thanks to all of the volunteers who help make these webcasts possible. We will try to webcast next week. The Dharma Talk will happen as usual next week. But we will try to webcast little bits of the pujas for you as well. Okay, everyone. Be well. Om mani padme hum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.